Welcome to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Bob Dancer is America's premier video poker writer and teacher. He's written 10 books, including Video Poker for the Intelligent Beginner and the best-selling Million Dollar Video Poker. He helped develop the computer software Video Poker for Winners, and in 2004, he was inducted into the Video Poker Hall of Fame. Richard Munchkin has been a professional Advantage player for over 30 years and is in the Blackjack Hall of Fame. His book, Gambling Wizards, Conversations with the World's Greatest Gamblers, is a testament to the many ways you can succeed at gambling. The goal of the show is that you'll be a more knowledgeable gambler tomorrow than you were yesterday. And now, here are Bob and Richard.
Good evening. Welcome to Gambling with an Edge. I'm Bob Dancer.
And I'm Richard Munchkin.
Our guest tonight is legal, Bob Nersessian. We'll be talking to this Blackjack Hall of Famer shortly. In the good news department, poker legend Doyle Brunson had some melanoma cancer removed from the top of his head, successfully. He tweeted out a picture of his scalp with three different incisions sewn up, in case anybody thought it was just a scratch. The next day, he kidded Daniel Negreanu by saying that the biggest incision on his scalp was when the Real Kid Pokers sought to extract some of his poker knowledge, and it didn't work. It shows he was in good spirits after some scary surgery. Get well soon, Texas Dolly.
Yeah, we should try to get him on the show.
I'd like that very much. We received an email at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com from a blackjack card counter. Seems he usually plays spreading from two reds to four greens with no heat. For the last two trips, it seems to be getting an unusual amount of interest from a pit critter. He wants to know if he's a marked man and his blackjack playing days are over. Richard, what can you tell him?
Yes. No, I mean, look, everybody starts out, they have a home casino where they spend all their time learning to play. And eventually, they're just going to catch on. It's not that hard to figure out when somebody is counting cards, especially if you're there often. So, yeah, they eventually are going to get sick of you and tell you not to play anymore. Now, if you really like that casino and, you know, want the comps there or whatever, if it's close to home and you want to eat in their restaurants and stuff like that, well, then maybe, you know, take up video poker or something and don't count cards there. But, you know, nothing lasts forever. Eventually, you are going to get barred. It sounds like they already have made you. And it doesn't matter that you're only betting nickels. I mean, I have seen, back in the old Griffin days, I saw a Griffin flyer coming out of one of the Coast properties, card counter spreading 5 to 30, you know. So it doesn't matter how little you bet. When they get sick of you, they get sick of you, and you'll be gone.
All right. Let's talk to our guest. Bob Nersessian is an attorney in Las Vegas specializing in player cases. Although he's only a modest player in his own right, he was voted into the Blackjack Hall of Fame by the players, very appreciative of the way he has fought on their behalf against false imprisonment by the casinos. Bob Nersessian, welcome to Gambling with an Edge.
Thank you, and thanks for giving me more credit than I deserve by saying I'm a modest player. I put casino executives' kids through college.
Is it true that they send a limo whenever you want to come to the casino?
Yeah, they do that with the red chip players.
All right. Well, with the right kind of red chip players, yeah, they would. There's a big case with some big money poker players, including a father and son combination, Paul and Darren Fua from Malaysia. They're accused of running a betting ring during the World Cup soccer matches several months ago. These players were staying at Caesar's Palace and requested a large number of high-speed internet connections to be installed. And with the connivance of the FBI, Caesar's interrupted the internet service, and FBI agents posing as internet repairmen were allowed into the villa. So far, at least some of the evidence gathered by these FBI agents have been thrown out. But the case still goes forward. A strange twist, the son, Darren, I think he's in his 20s, apparently misses his home and family and has agreed to cop to a misdemeanor of being an accessory after the fact to the transmission of betting data. He pays a $100,000 fine, can't re-enter the United States for 5 years, and gives up all claims to the $125,000 seized and lots of electronic equipment that was also seized during the arrest. My question for Bob Nersessian is, isn't this a pretty steep fine for a misdemeanor? And second, how is this likely to affect the trial of his father, Paul?
Okay. The $100,000 fine would not be for a misdemeanor. It is something else. It's an agreed forfeiture. I don't believe there's any such thing as a $100,000 fine for a misdemeanor. So, yes, this question, maybe it was sent over. I didn't see this coming. But when you said $100,000 for a misdemeanor, my reaction is I text NFW. Okay? So,
At an agreed plea deal, they can agree to anything they want in a plea deal.
Yeah, and when they see money, I mean, they're going to go for all they can, right?
And holy crud, that's what this is always about. We've talked on the past shows about forfeitures, all that kind of stuff. I have been involved in numerous cases where they're talking about this crime or that crime, but my discussions with the AUSA or the local prosecutor or whatever all turns around, well, let us keep some of the money and we'll work out the rest, okay? You know what? It's organized theft. How else do you put it? And I've been following the case a little bit, the one you're talking about. And the other thing that strikes me, I don't know this case in particular, but other cases I have had, I don't know if these guys were illegal bookmaking, but one of the things that goes on is there are betting partnerships in sports everywhere that are very sophisticated. They have dozens or hundreds of members sometimes, and they are all members. And there's as I understand it, there's nothing illegal about that. But when they come up on a room with 22 TVs, 40 computers, and $600,000 in cash in a drawer,
that looks suspicious.
Well, and it does look suspicious. But the explanations are not that hard. If 100 people want to get together and pool their money and their intelligence and bet as a unit, there's nothing wrong with that. And yet, I personally know of two circumstances where those things were taken down and the money disappeared. I'll tell you, one of them was a cousin of mine, and it's before all the stuff that we don't know now, and I'm not even going to drop his name, and you probably wouldn't know it, but he was well-known, very well-known here in the 70s and 80s. And he and his brother were in a partnership with dozens of people in Detroit. Where do you place wagers? You place them in Vegas. They arrested 32 people.
Was this part of the computer group?
No, it was not a computer group. These guys were just good old-fashioned
bookies.
No.
Handicappers.
Thank you, Richard. And they arrested 32 of them. Now, my cousin was a two-time loser, so he took a plea with no time. But they were pushing. Actually, he took a plea with some time. The next two cases went to trial with not guilty verdicts, and then they dropped the other 29, the U.S. attorney did. But it was never, never bookmaking. It was always, always, always handicapping with a large group of people sharing in the investment. And the government doesn't understand the difference because they see money moving around, and they think, there's something wrong here.
I had a friend who had a horse betting operation, and the feds basically came and said, we think something's going on here. You know, there's an awful lot of money moving through these accounts. And so with the advice of their attorney said, open the door to the feds and let them come in and watch your operation. And so they did, and the feds came in because they said that it's not possible that anyone could be making this much money just betting on horses. So the feds came in, sat in their operation for 2 weeks. At the end of 2 weeks, they said, you're right. You're just betting on horses. You're making an awful lot of money. And they said, you know, you're fine. They left. My friends shut their doors and moved the operation offshore.
Yeah, because...
Who wants that kind of...
Yeah. They'll come back with something else.
And it's a miracle that they walked away, because the other thing you run into, and I see it repeatedly in the government paperwork, they have no understanding of what is actually going on. They are investigating gambling by people who come out of Wharton School of Business or whatever else, who have an accounting degree, and there's much more of a science and much... A finance degree might make you a little more intelligent, but you need statisticians and people like that to even be able to figure it out. And these reports I read have these government agents writing up stuff that is gibberish. And the weird part is they know it's gibberish because they have written it in a circle where if you understand the math and you read what's going on, you recognize that they don't understand and that they are just trying to make things up. If the FBI, the Secret Service, and these others want to start doing this right and catching real criminals, hire the right people.
Yeah. But yeah, they can't afford the right people, though, right?
No. I mean, these people can find money hidden in a bank account, but... Ask them what the difference is between 7 to 5 and 8 to 6, and they're looking at you with a funny stare. Yeah. Which I understand the other one is 4 to 3, but
yeah.
All right, let's change the subject a little bit. Last time you were on the show, Bob, we spoke about the Golden Nugget pre-sorted cards case in Atlantic City. Briefly, the casino bought pre-sorted cards from the Jamaco.
You mean pre-shuffled cards?
Pre-sorted, pre-shuffled. Yeah.
Yeah. Pre-sorted would be illegal.
Pre-shuffled? Okay. Well, no, they were shuffled in a particular format, in a sorted format, so they knew what it was. So it looked random if you didn't know what that order was. And so these players noticed that this shoe was following exactly the same order as the last shoe. They upped their bets to the table max, something like $5,000 a hand for several people, and they kept going for 41 hands and $1.5 million a head. Golden Nugget pulled the plug. There have been 3 trials so far. One of the first two were handled by the same judge. One time he says players have to give the money back. The other time he says they can keep the money. It got bumped up to a higher trial. Higher court, superior court, and she says because they weren't randomly shuffled, and that's a key part of the game, the players should have known that one of the key elements of the game were missing, so the players have to give all the money back and all the chips that were uncashed back. Now, players think this is a pretty outrageous ruling, must be appealed. What do you know about this, Bob?
I don't know anything about it except what you just told me and a few things I've read in the paper. Uh-huh. Actually, the results that you're describing, I did not know. I do know this, and here's the rub, if you will. When that casino makes that mistake, do they go find the player and something happens where they end up with a lot more money? Do they go and find that player and say, oops, we made a mistake, here's your money back? No, they don't. And this is just, on top of everything else, it's poor sportsmanship. You screw up in a gambling game, if you show your cards to the guy next to you, which is exactly what they did, and they capitalize on it, shame on you. Let me add, just as an example, anecdotally, for how one of these things works in Nevada. Okay. And I'm sure both of you have heard this, all right? How many times have you heard of a casino boss coming in from a back room somewhere after having talked to surveillance, walking up to a table and saying to a guy, we overpaid you $5,000, 7 hands back. We've got the film. We want our $5,000. happens all the time. How many times have you seen a casino walk up to a guy and say, surveillance saw that we forgot to pay you $5,000. Here's $5,000. All right.
That has happened to me once, actually.
Okay. Bless them. All right. But I would say anecdotally, from the number of times that I have seen casinos try to make people pay back on bets that they haven't, that they have no recollection of and didn't even know that it was dealt wrong, and even can't confirm that it's dealt wrong, the substance that I'm talking about says that the balance should be about even, and I've seen about 40 to 1 or 40 to 0, and now that you gave me the 1, Bob, it's 40 to 1. So that means 39 times out of that, the casino is not doing what they're making you do, and they're taking advantage of it. And I got to imagine, if you have a casino surveillance guy upstairs, and he goes, wow, that guy just called a 19. He only had an 18. That hand was a push. Well, that's the way it goes. He doesn't call someone.
All right? You know, I have a question, because I've run into this situation where they've said exactly what you're talking about and said, okay, just let me see the tape. And they won't show it. So what's a player to do in that situation?
I suggest that if it's the right amount of money, you pick up your chips and walk out the door.
Huh.
All right? Here's one thing. Certainly, you need that is a specific intent crime to steal that money. You have to know it happened. And if you don't know it happened and they won't show you the tape, how's that going to look later? I'm not going to say you're not going to get arrested, but there's every chance you're going to get out of the casino. And when they do try to sue you, you haven't committed a crime. And when they do try to sue you, we've talked about this here before, casinos have no civil remedy to collect back an overpaid debt, an overpaid gambling win. No civil remedy. They can't go to any court. They, at least in Nevada, they do not have standing to sue on a gambling debt. That's the law here. Only patrons do, and then only through the Gaming Control Board. And the Gaming Control Board has no jurisdiction to award money back to a casino once they overpay it.
So if the Phil Ivey case that's for the Borgata in Atlantic City, they're trying to get their money back. If that happened in Nevada,
if Phil had the money in his hand, they might evaluate it criminally. I don't think they'd come up with any charges, but no, the Borgata under Nevada law could not sue for that money back.
Interesting. All right. Another change of subject. We've gotten about 3 emails on this particular incident, and if we hadn't gotten the emails, I would have brought it up anyway because I want to know the answer. There was this, in New Jersey, there was this big player who was promised certain things, such as room, food and beverage, match play coupons, free poolside cabanas, etc., by the Borgata, the Tropicana, and the Revel. The player had the nerve to win while playing, so that now these casinos are accused of reneging on their promises. Now, the Revel has been excused from this because they're out of business. But this is currently in federal court in Camden, New Jersey. Bob, what's your take on promises made by casinos only being kept when the player loses and not when the player wins?
What do you think my take is?
Well, I'm expecting to see you bounce off the ceiling. What do you
Oh, my. Well, it's just more of the same crap we're always talking about, and I'm sorry that we have to keep talking about it, and I wish it would stop, but no, it keeps going on, and I'm not surprised in the least by what you have there. In New Jersey, they sue. They report it to the Gaming Control Board, but the remedy is to sue, and if it appears contractual, and everything you said says it appears contractual, the player will win.
And by the way, if a casino promises you show-up money, get it when you show up. I mean, the guy waited till the next day to ask for his $5,000. I mean,
there's the other thing. From my experience with what we're talking about, this guy is not going in saying that this is what happened. This guy's going in likely with emails, too.
Yeah.
Yeah. And if he's got the emails from the casino that say, you get $5,000 in show-up money and he shows up, I have no concept of how he doesn't win that.
Yeah. And so if you do get promised, your advice is to get it in writing.
Usually it is in writing. I've seen them. I think you guys have seen them too.
Well, I mean, I have had written offers in writing, but I've also been promised things,
okay.
And usually they're honored.
And usually they are. I know people who have talked about rebates and then gotten them in writing. But
I always try to deal with casino people. If I'm dealing with a host, I always try to deal with it via email. You know, not face to face. I always try.
That's my experience, is that it is almost always via email, and they're also not too bright about the stuff they write down in email. They don't think it all the way through, so you end up with things like, well, eventually Revel going bankrupt because they do put things in writing.
Yes, like any money you lose, we'll give it all back to you. This is a brilliant thing.
So, do you think it would be any different in Nevada? I mean, okay.
Maybe. In Nevada, you would stand a good chance of a court saying that this has to go to the Gaming Control Board. This is outside of our jurisdiction. There are two arguments that wouldn't be the case. If it's a promotion, the statute says it goes to the Gaming Control Board. The problem with that is also a common law action, and we have a statute we have a constitution, just like the federal government does, that describes the absolute basic individual rights that humans have, citizens and visitors to this state, and one of those is a right to jury trial. So there's no such thing as a right to jury trial in front of the Nevada Gaming Control Board. So this could be a classic common law action. And if it existed in 1864, that this type of claim would have gone to a jury, you can demand a jury trial and you're entitled to it. And now you're in court.
Huh. I'm guessing that I certainly was never promised RFB before 1864. How about you, Munch?
Oh, you think that before 1864 in Nevada, that saloons and some of these places out in the Wild West, which is where we are, wouldn't lure gamblers in much the same way they do today? I would suggest that would not have been uncommon in the least.
Well, they used upstairs bedrooms more than they do today in normal casinos.
Well, there's an interesting common law action.
All right. Now, earlier this month, a Nevada Supreme Court upheld a player's conviction for not paying markers worth some $364,000. Is this surprising in any way? I guess I always assumed that if you took out a marker, you had to pay it back, or bad things would happen. Now, and yet it made all the big news because the Supreme Court upheld that he owed the money.
That's not why it made the big news.
Okay.
Okay. It made the big news because it was fraud. It was bouncing a check. It was, as I recall, put through the It went through the DA's office, and there was criminality alleged and involved as well. And the problem is that our statutes make bouncing a check illegal. And now I'm going to talk about our Constitution again, and I'm slamming the table. I apologize, Richard. Our statutes make bouncing a check illegal, and yet our Constitution says that you can't send someone to prison for not paying a debt.
Isn't that changing? I mean, I thought the credit card companies were finding ways to do exactly
that. Well, they're doing some of that. And what they say is, you're not going to prison for not paying a debt. You're going to prison for signing the document in the first place that promised you would pay the debt. And that was the fraud. Oh, garbage. All right. But that's what's been going on. And that's what's been going on here for years. And for any lawyers listening, and please do not hang this on the wall and think that this is a panacea. But I want to see somebody take a marker case and, first of all, understand gambling debts cannot be collected under the law unless there's a statute that allows them. Our statute that allows the collection of markers says that a casino has a right to collect a credit instrument. Markers are checks. They could have constructed them as promissory notes. They could have constructed them as IOUs. Both of those are instruments, and they're credit instruments. Instead, they chose a check. Guess what a check is? It's a payment instrument. It is not a credit instrument. They've chosen to use a method for this debt as a check. And again, that's not a credit instrument. What do you do with that marker? You buy chips. You didn't buy a gambling debt. You bought chips. And you can take those chips, and in some circumstances, with what the Gaming Control Board says, you can walk into another casino, turn them into cash. You can't use them as cash in the casino, but markers have value, and you bought the markers. How is that a debt? It's a like-kind exchange, okay? So it's not a gambling debt. Nobody's been making this argument. That is the argument that I would have led with in that case, or at least thrown it into. But the biggest problem is that these are loans. They hold those markers, and then when you don't pay them, it's criminal. And some circumstances, for example, take this as an example. Somebody is a whale, and they are gambling, and they have $400,000 in markers out. They fly home to somewhere on the East Coast, and the next day Hurricane Sandy takes out their house. Okay? They owe a mortgage company, they owe this, they owe that, and they owe that casino. There was never an intent not to pay back that marker. Circumstances jumped on top of them, and now they're getting criminally prosecuted on that marker, where historically, if it was a loan, you couldn't be prosecuted on a loan because you can't go to jail for a debt. To use the phrase that everybody here should recognize, America does not have debtor's prison. Nevada does.
Uh-huh. Now, UNLV is now offering a master's degree in gambling law and regulation. In your opinion, is this a good thing?
Are any of the questions I'm going to get today not coming out of left field?
Well, actually, you were sent a list of all these questions.
I was.
Yes.
I read the wrong list. I read this one.
Well, why don't you pick one on there? And that would look at the very last one.
Oh, just because I'm having issues doesn't mean that I don't have an opinion.
He gets the emails and prints them. He just doesn't read them.
Yeah, the bottom. Okay. Read the last one.
Well, I think it's wonderful. I think somebody who gets one of these masters, please, please, please step in on my side of the table. All right. One of the problems I see with all of this is everybody thinks that they want to be a casino executive. That's only half the darn equation. And who's out there watching out for the guys who are actually making these businesses work, the customers? Instead, and I've been involved with some UNLV gaming legal stuff. I'm not saying it's pervasive, but there is an opinion there about some of the people who are involved in that that is very strong along the lines of everybody has to be a ploppy. Ploppies are what keep us alive. Casinos are the good guys, and they can do no wrong, all right? And a lot of what this is going to teach is just how much casinos can get away with. And I will bet you dollars to donuts, and since you brought it up, please, I'm challenging UNLV. Put in a course in players' rights. and let people know what can be done for the gamblers and the tourists to keep our city moving.
Why don't you apply to teach that course in your copious free time? You're certainly qualified.
I'd be happy to. I've spoken at UNLV, but guess what? Generally, when it comes to institutional-type engagements, I'm not. I'm sort of persona non grata to this time. And
because you're on the wrong side?
Yeah. Yeah. I've seen this. I'm not indicting UNLV on it. I've seen it in other places, too. It's okay. I really enjoy being the guy hitting my head against the wall.
Now, I heard rumors one time that you were at Texas Station, and you found this video poker machine that if you put in $5 and immediately hit the cash-out button, $10 worth of quarters would fall into the tray. And so if you put $20 in, immediately $40 would fall into the tray. Now, is this a true story, and what did you do?
Wow. That's not on the list. It's a true story.
Yeah.
And I walked away with an amount of money that would make a lot of the listeners and other people here who would take a shot go, all right, I no longer have any respect for Bob. It happened on a cash out, and I went, whoa, that works. Look at all those quarters coming out. So I put in 20, and out comes 40. Now I've got a bucket full of $40. I took out another 20, looked at it, put it in my top pocket, grabbed the 40, and took 20 of it out and walked up to the cashier's cage and said, your machine overpaid me.
Uh-huh. Now, there's a chance that some of our listeners would not have taken that.
Yeah, I think many of our listeners would not have chosen that option.
This was a setup, and I asked Bob to ask me this question just so that I could show the whole world that I am so incredibly honest and don't want to rot
right.
in hell.
Well, it's not
a setup. I didn't.
No, I mean, we should. I will explain where this question came from, because I was asking Bob. There was this famous case that we talked about many times on the show of this two guys who found this flaw in video poker machines at the Silverton and somewhere back in Pennsylvania.
Meadows,
and if they hit exactly the right series of buttons, they could basically change the amount from, say, 25-cent machine to a $5 machine after they had a jackpot hand. So I was asking Bob before the show if – now, all these machines have been corrected. They no longer exist. But I was asking him if one still existed and – you were to find it, would he play it? And then he told this story. And then I amended the question and said, well, let's forget about you playing it. Would you recommend I play it? or would you recommend I not play it for legal reasons?
From knowing the Pennsylvania case, I understand. And when I looked at it, I thought what they did was not illegal. Okay? Not illegal is not the same thing as not finding yourself in jail.
Right.
Okay?
Right.
And that's where I come from. All right.
Yeah.
I've seen way too many innocent gamblers get prosecuted. I told you right now there's a case going on in Illinois where they're actually prosecuting hole carding as a crime.
Oh yeah. Now tell us about that. What's
going
on?
I don't know a whole lot about it except that they're prosecuting hole carding as a crime. Illinois has the same statute we have that says if you act with knowledge not known to all players in the game, then that's cheating.
So then card counting is cheating.
Well, there's the big rub. According to them, the guy who sits at third base, and they're aiding and abetting this, is cheating because they're giving him more information before he has decisions to make by the cards that came out to first and second base and all that other stuff. He's got more information than they do. The guy at third base, if he's a card counter, he is making bets on information that was not held by all persons at the table. Yeah. So it doesn't make it doesn't make any sense. Right. It's a ridiculous statute.
And if we're at the crap table and I happen to know the percentages of the different bets and you don't, so that you know
it's information available to all people at the table. I'm sorry. But let me point out another thing. They've got it just dead wrong anyway. A table game like blackjack is not the guy sitting next to you is not in your game. Okay? He's got his own game. There are, let's say it's a full table. There are 6 one-on-one games. There is not one game of 6-on-1.
You haven't seen the way I play it.
So the entire idea is messed up, and that statute can't have any applications. But I've had discussions with attorneys general for gaming here in Nevada about that, and they're sitting there saying the one discussion I had was they weren't sure that, or one of the discussions I had was that they weren't sure that hole carding wasn't cheating, and I showed them the Einbinder case, and first there was the surprised look by the attorney general, that the assistant attorney general, that our Supreme Court said this? Yeah, it's right here. Okay? But then, well, maybe that's time to look at that again. And then I gave the argument I just gave, and I said, how can you sit? And then the big one was the idea that the guy sitting at third base in a blackjack game knows that 2, 3, and 5 just came out at the beginning, and he's got decisions to make because you're coming around to him, and he's got more information than everybody on the table, and therefore, the guy at third base is always making decisions that make him a criminal under your characterization. Do you think that's what the legislature intended? They stopped arguing, but apparently in Illinois, that argument hasn't worked yet.
Wow. That's scary. When is that? Do you know when that case is supposed to be heard?
Or? No. I think there are some motions up within the next couple of months, but I don't know when the actual criminal trial is scheduled.
Oh, now, we were also going to talk about this case that with all the criminal another one of these cases where the guys were pushing the buttons and
On a Keno
machine, right, yeah. Right, and that's was Illinois and Mississippi, and you were saying a bunch of those charges have just been dropped.
No, not dropped. It went to trial.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and it was in Illinois, 80 counts of money laundering, cheating, theft, structuring. Believe it or not, Illinois has its own state structuring statute. Yeah. There's a real good use of state resources, isn't it? Okay. So, Rob Loeb. You know Rob.
Yes, we do. He's been on the show.
Yeah.
Rob took it to trial, and it was a bench trial, and the judge listened to everything and said, you haven't proven any crimes. And found the defendant not guilty. It's a wonderful coup for Rob, and it's a wonderful thing for the industry. And it's nice to see judges be reasonable and not buy into the
casino is always right.
Yeah, because how crazy, or again, if you lay something out there and say to people, come play it, this isn't an ATM machine. Okay, this is a contest. These people put these things out and dare you to beat it. And then if you do, they go, well, we didn't really think you could.
Yeah, these are the same guys who were driving back to Vegas across I-40 and had most of their winnings confiscated by the highway patrol or police, right? Anyway.
400,000.
Did they get that back, or is that a different case?
That's still hanging out there from what I understand. You've heard me have rants about I-40 before.
Yes.
That's one of the examples I know, but that's not the only one. Okay. Eric Holder is not my favorite person in the world, but he put forfeiture on the front page when he said, we're not going to do this anymore. And now it's time other people started picking up on it and started making the states stop doing it too. This country will fall will fall if the government thinks that they can just steal from the people and that they run things rather than the people. I'm sorry, I'm on a high horse now, but I find very few things in our society, capital punishment included, more disgusting and base than the civil forfeiture laws that they are enforcing across this land.
Amen.
Okay, good. Hallelujah. Let's go on to something else. One we've also revisited numerous times, video poker on an iPhone app or Android app.
Well, we have. We've talked about it forever.
But
I think we had another email.
Good. And so you have said repeatedly, this is clearly against Nevada's device law. Don't do it. And players go, well, it's never been prosecuted. And so if it's never been prosecuted, isn't that the same as a law not being on the books? And your answer to that is?
Huh?
Huh?
The law is on the books.
Oh, the law's on the books.
It's not the same as the law not being on the books. All it takes is one ardent prosecutor and one pissed off casino to join hands at the node of the leaf, and the next thing you know, you're in jail or you're paying fines.
You're talking about the device law.
Yeah. I mean, just because something hasn't been prosecuted, when is the last time you heard about somebody going to jail as a common scold? Do you even know what a common scold is? A common scold is a bitchy woman. That's what a common scold is, and it's a crime, believe it or not. But if somebody gets something in their craw, you can bet there's going to be a common scold prosecution if that's the only thing they can come up with. So why give them something if you're already persona non grata as an AP?
Yeah. I mean, they seem to be fine with you using a card or a sheet of paper, so just use that. You know, don't use the phone.
Well, I have a client who got sort of – I got a couple of clients who got sort of in trouble on the piece of paper.
Well, that doesn't surprise me that some casino is going to decide that that's cheating, you know, to use a video poker card.
Well, if they could have, and this goes back to something I think we were talking about earlier, the hiring the wrong people and not understanding gambling. They had 6 cops, including 3 investigators, looking at this guy, looking at a hand hierarchy sheet for the particular video poker he was playing.
Strategy card, yes.
A strategy card, fine. And he looked at it 2 times over like 24 hours of play in this place, twice. And if you looked at what was up on the screen, it was like 3 to a royal against the pair of nines on a very obscure machine, like tens or betters with 3 kickers or something like that. So that's the strategy sheet he has. And need, you know, at that, do you hold the nines or the 3 to the royal? And so he pulls out his card. He looks at it. They investigated this. They had all these people looking at it. I've read the reports where they're going, where they're speculating about how this is some sort of information from the manufacturer's employee who sent them the gaffe on how to beat the machine, or this, that, or the other thing. When all it is, and these things, their videos were very good. They could look at the sheet, okay, and it said something like 3RLP, 3 to a royal, low pair. And they're sitting here going, spending 20 hours trying to figure out what that means. And when it's all done, they still conclude this is evidence of cheating and evidence of manipulation of the machine.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, goodness. But they were insane, all right? They were insane on so many levels in this matter. We've already gotten we got summary judgment against 3 of those cops for being idiots, okay?
You got summary judgments against a cop for being an idiot?
I have 5 summary judgments against police officers right now, and I don't know of anybody else who gets any summary judgments against police officers. But
was this Vegas?
2 of those summary judgments are Vegas, and 3 of them, it might only be 4. Either 2 or 3 of them were in Phoenix.
But the thing with the video poker card.
That was Phoenix.
Oh, okay.
That was federal court in Phoenix.
What good does it do to get a summary judgment against a cop?
Well, at that point, the employers of the two cops and the employers of the cops who had not yet had their motion brought against them paid a couple of $100,000.
That sounds like a good outcome.
So,
of course, they gave it to him in cash, and he had to drive home on I-40. But
good. Let's
wait a minute. I don't understand what your question is when you say, "What good is it to get
a summary judgment against a cop as opposed to
a city?"
Yeah, a city or a casino or
generally, and I don't know this for sure, but generally the municipalities will stand behind their police officers because they're police officers. They always think their police officers, even after they get judgments against them, are doing right. Okay.
Generally, or even if they're wrong, they were doing their duties.
I can't go that far. I think it's just that cops do things, and if there's a judgment against the cop and we don't stand up behind the cop, nobody's going to work for us. That's not true. But as a general rule, a municipality or a government agency, when you get the judgment against the police officer, will cover the police officer. Did I just admit on air to the public that I sue cops? I love police.
I'm not driving home with you.
Uh-huh. All right.
I don't do it often. It really takes a lot of stuff, and usually they have to be in cahoots with casinos. In fact, the only cop cases I have ever brought were with casino-initiated issues.
All right. I actually didn't realize he'd sued the cops until he...
I didn't realize I was going to tell everybody I did either.
He made a point that telling us what he did.
Well,
was very good. Let's talk about the South Point. It has more than 10,000 games, returning more than 99%. That's more than anybody else has.
I have no comment on that.
Throughout March, there's two separate casino-wise progressives running 24/7. In the $600,000 March Money Madness. The bigger the two progressives begins at $10,000 and must be hit it before it reaches $25,000. And one winner gets all the money, and everybody else actively playing earns $25 in free play when it goes off. Immediately thereafter, it starts again at $10,000 and begins to climb. Simultaneously with this is another progressive beginning at $1,000, which must be hit by $2,500. This too will start again immediately after it hits, and it's predicted to be hit three times a day all month long. If you wear green on next Tuesday, St. Patrick's Day, midnight to midnight, or even if you don't, you'll get 2x points on all video poker machines, 5x points on slots and video reels, all machines, no limit. Next week's class at noon, Wednesday, in the Grandview Lounge will be NSU Deuces Wild. This is a Deuces Wild pay schedule that returns 99.73%, which gives the player a slight advantage 24/7 on single point days, and which is 0.3 at that casino, and a bigger advantage on double point days. The next 3 weeks are, including NSU, will be three variations of Deuces Wild. The games will vary by the amount you get for a flush, the amount you get for straight, the amount you get for full house, and players who come to this will see how a strategy changes as those elements change. There are dozens and dozens of Deuces Wild pay schedules out there, and sometimes players will come across a new one and want to play it anyway. You need to get a feel of how you should adjust your strategy based on the pay schedules. At the Palms, the weekly 7 p.m. drawings on Friday share $10,000. You do not need to be there to win. You need to claim the prize by midnight or it evaporates. 5x drawing entries Friday, 7:45 to midnight, and 2x entries on Friday between 4 and 6:30 p.m. Play for points, play for prizes. Monday through Friday will be real cash money, up to $190 per day, may be earned and redeemed. Gift cards and cash is earned at a rate of 0.20%.
you keep your points. At videopoker.com, it's the best place to play a lot of games. Gold membership allows you to practice Quick Quads, which is the game I'm going to be playing on Double Point Days at the South Point next week. The game of the week this week is 100 Play with Quick Quads, which is actually the most fun video poker game that I know of. I have not seen it in real casinos where they have a pay table that I consider attractive, but were that to appear, 100 Play, like I play 10 Play for dollars, playing 100 Play for pennies would be the same total bet, but a whole lot more fun and lower volatility for both the house and the casinos. All right. Now, I saw Bob Nersessian pass a note to Richard, which I haven't read yet. Is there a question?
I don't know if you really want to ask it.
Yeah. Well, I haven't seen it.
He asked, how does the machine know if you're wearing green?
How does the machine know if you're wearing green?
To get the double points.
I don't know. I actually...
He did say, even if you're not. So.
Oh, okay.
You missed that part.
Actually, it happened that Bonnie and I were in a 99-cent store, and they had these huge emerald green hats for $1.49 apiece. And so we're going to...
Is that allowed for them to charge you $1.49 if it's a 99-cent
store? Don't pretend this is a legal question.
I hadn't thought of that. So anyway, we're going to a square dance thing that night. So we're going to wear it to that. But I will also have that on when I'm playing at the South Point. I get there midnight Monday night.
Do you try to play 24 hours on the...
No, I will play...
You like to play in the middle of the night? Is that...
I prefer. There's less less competition for machines. Often there's only four Quick Quads machines. And during the daytime, they're full. At nighttime, they're largely empty. So I can play two machines, which I normally don't do. But during this particular promotion this month, where if your card is in and you've played within the last 30 seconds, when this jackpot goes off, you get the $25 of free play. So I will play on one machine with my card and another machine with Bonnie's card, which is allowed there. You can play on your spouse's card. And so that if the jackpot goes off in the 6 or 8 or 10 hours that I'm there, I will collect on both cards. I normally don't do that.
It's probably less smoky, too, in the middle of the
night. It's a lot less smoky. And so fewer people come up and ask questions and stuff.
I saw the 1 minute. I just wanted to say thanks for having me.
You are our favorite guest. We get more positive comments about you than any of our others.
And I would say we get more questions, but it's always the same question that we get over and over.
Yeah, so. About video poker. So we actually have more questions. So that we didn't get to tonight. So that means that
you have a book coming out soon. So we'll have to have you back when that. I say soon, but
it's been soon for a long time.
Yeah,
is it? I'm on the second edit with the publisher.
Great.
Well, good. So would you guess June? Would you guess September?
Oh, I pray by June. Okay.
All right. So with Bob praying, Richard and I say thank you very much. Go out and hit royal flushes, everybody. Good night.
Good night.
You've been listening to Gambling with an Edge with your hosts, Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin. Subscribe to the show in iTunes, and episodes will be delivered to you automatically every week. Archived versions of past shows may be found at bobdancer.com and richardmunchkin.com. We welcome emails at gamblingwithanedge@gmail.com. Bob Dancer and Richard Munchkin are both available on Facebook and welcome your questions. The sponsors for the show are the South Point Hotel, Casino, and Spa, the M Resort, the Palms Casino Resort, and the website videopoker.com. Join us again next week for another Gambling with an Edge.
My name is Jeffrey Burke, and I'm the host of The Staying Healthy Show here on KLAV. The Staying Healthy Show is now on KLAV 10 times per week. 10 times for you to hear the best guest in the industry and learn about the best nutritional products available.